Welcome to the Spooky Electric Podcast by me, Trent Venegas. You need another podcast, like you need another hole in your head. So here we go. It is time for another episode of Spooky Electric. And this week, I've decided to talk about the singer-songwriter Rufus Wainwright. Now, Rufus and I go back a long way. He's one of the rare male singers that I am really a big fan of. I overwhelmingly prefer female voices. I love female singers. Something about like female pop stars just really resonates with me much more than male singers do. But there are a few male singers that I love, and Rufus Wainwright is one of those singers. It's been a very long time since I've actually talked about Rufus or even thought about Rufus. In recent years, my fandom has, I wouldn't say fallen away, but there's just so much out there and there's just so much new music and there's so many other things to focus on that I had forgotten how much Rufus and his music meant to me. And in the past couple weeks, I'm not even sure what it was that reminded me or inspired me to listen to him again. Oh, actually, I do know what it was. So lately, I've been working a job where I'm able to wear headphones all day. So I listen to hours and hours of music every day lately, which is awesome. And it's also part of the reason why I decided to switch my podcasting platform from pop culture to music. And I was listening to Spotify, and Spotify will let you know when there are new albums or new singles that are released from artists that you've listened to previously. Now, honestly, it doesn't really do a great job of that. I'm always left wanting more heads up from a platform like Spotify, considering how much music I listen to on the platform. There should be like a whole page dedicated to, you know, new artists, new music, new singles, and it really doesn't do it very well. There's like one little part of the mobile app that lets you know, oh, like new music for you, and it's like only four or five options. They're great, I mean, but it's like the obvious things, like if Taylor Swift puts out a new record like she just did, it'll be there. But anyways, while listening to something else on Spotify, it let me know that Rufus Wainwright had just released a brand new album this year, this month. So I thought, oh my God, like Rufus has a new record. Holy shit. Like it didn't even occur to me that I hadn't thought about him in so long. And then I realized that it had been many years since his last album and many, many years since I was super, super focused and obsessed with his albums that I realized that I wasn't caught up at all on what's going on in Rufus Wainwright's career. Especially in the past decade. But as I mentioned, me and Rufus go way back to the release of his debut album back in 1998. Back then, my first boyfriend, who had really good taste in music, he was someone who introduced me to a lot of artists and genres that I now passionately love that I hadn't been clued in on back then. In the late 90s, I was coming out of my, I've always been a pop kid, and I will say this forever. You know, I've always had my fingers on the pulse of, like, top 40 and what, like, the big hit songs of the moment are. But the 90s was my grunge, industrial, goth period, where I was, like, Nine Inch Nails, Marilyn Manson, like, a lot of harder bands, harder and harder music. And by the end of the 90s, around the onset of, like, Lilith Fair and all of those amazing female singer-songwriters, I was, you know, getting more a sense of that kind of music. Again, focusing solely or primarily on the women who were making this kind of music. And my first boyfriend at the time is the one who introduced me to Rufus Wainwright. I think he sold Rufus to me as a guy in a piano, kind of like how Tori Amos was sold to me as a girl in a piano, which sounded interesting to me. And I do remember the first time I heard Rufus sing, I was not super impressed. He has a very nasally voice. I don't wanna hold you. Like, it's very nasally, and I apologize for just doing that in your ear. Sorry. He has a very nasal sounding voice, and it was off-putting to me at first, but because, I was so into this guy, I was like, all right, I'm gonna listen to this record and give it a shot. I remember I went to a used CD store, and I bought the used CD for like $1 or $2 or something. What's great about buying CDs, or I guess when we used to buy CDs, was going to a used record shop and brand new albums, brand new promo albums, some of them still sealed, likely with the promo stamp on it, were resold in used record stores for like $1, $5, which is, you know, way cheaper than the actual album at $15. So I remember I found a brand new unopened copy of Rufus Wainwright's debut album, which is self-titled Rufus Wainwright, and I gave it a listen, and I immediately fell in love with the whole thing. He is around my age and openly gay, and he sings about what he knows, and he sings about love and relationships and people in his life. And because it is from a gay man's perspective, it is something that I had not been really exposed to up to that point before. And I will get to the specifics of the individual songs as I talk about the songs I've selected for the playlist for this podcast episode. But just a couple things to mention before I get into that. I love Rufus for a host of reasons, but one of the big reasons that I love Rufus is when I first saw him on tour, and I saw him on tour a lot in those early days, he had a singer-songwriter named Imogen Heap open up for him. And that's how I learned about Imogen Heap. She opened for him on his first tour, and holy shit, she's amazing. As you probably know, for sure I will be podcasting about Imogen Heap at some point. Not only Imogen, but her her group Frou Frou and all of that. But I learned about Imogen from Rufus because she toured and opened for him. So I will always be indebted to him for that. As I tend to do when I get obsessed with something, I tend to overdo it. So in the beginning, or on his first tour, I saw 4 shows almost in a row. Like, I think they were all the same week. March 23rd, 1999, March 28th, 1999, March 31st, 1999, and April 2nd, 1999. I saw Rufus four times in a row in 1 week. And I remember I went with a few different people, but my boyfriend and I went to, I believe, the first show together, or one of the first two shows together. And we thought it would be funny to throw our underwear on stage at him. So we took brand new clean boxer shorts and threw them on stage, kind of like, because, you know, when you're like a teen heartthrob or whatever, like girls would throw their underwear on stage, and it's a very like cliched pop star thing to do. So we thought it would be funny. I don't remember if he might have said something about it. He might have held them up and like laughed or something. I did meet him after some of those shows. He signed my CD. I have photos with him, which I will probably post on the Instagram, on the Spooky Electric Instagram, so you can see. And yeah, so I was like a Rufus Wainwright groupie back in the day. In addition to the multiple albums that he's written, he also has written two operas, Prima Donna in 2009 and Hadrian in 2018, as well as a tribute to Shakespeare's sonnets, which he titled All Days Are Nights, Songs for Lulu in 2010. Now, those three albums I won't be talking about. You know, I'm not an opera person, and opera is definitely not my thing. I do remember listening to Prima Donna when it came out, but I was like, oh, like it wasn't even so much that it was just bad. I just don't like opera, so it wasn't really my thing. So those three albums I won't be talking about because I don't have anything to say, honestly. So let's get to it. His debut album, Rufus Wainwright, was released in 1998. And the first song on this playlist is Danny Boy, which is a song written about it's an unadulterated love song to an unrequited love. For me, it was the first same-sex love song that I ever heard like this. In the song, Rufus is insanely in love and obsessed with a straight guy who he just fawned over. The whole song is just how much he loves him and how much he aches for this guy, which was something that I could absolutely 100% identify with. Because as you may recall, when I did my podcast about the music of my boyfriends, I talked at some length about the very first guy I was actually really in love with, a straight guy who I was obsessed with, and I ached for this guy, and I just, you know, it was unrequited. I never got what I wanted back from that interaction, from that relationship. And here's Rufus singing about this very same scenario, and it just hit me like a Mack truck. And I was like, oh my God, like it just spoke to me. So that very much played a huge role in making me a Rufus Wainwright fan. The lyrics of Danny Boy are very descriptive of the situation. You know, he sings, "You broke my heart, Danny Boy. It's not your fault, Danny Boy." Like, you know, he just loved this guy so much, and in doing so, he had his heart broken, but it wasn't even this guy's fault because he's straight, like, he's not gay, so he can't love him back in the same way. And it's like, yes, I can identify with that so much, because in my situation, I ached so much, and I wanted it so bad, and it just broke my heart so badly. But I couldn't even really be mad at the guy because it wasn't his fault. It wasn't his fault that I loved him, and it wasn't his fault that he didn't love me back. And that's exactly what Rufus sings about in this song, which obviously I can identify with. The suffering that he felt was so strong. He likened it to Job's suffering in the Bible. Like, you know, the parable about Job, and he just suffered so badly over and over and over again, and God just kept punishing him to prove a point, which is totally fucked up. But the point is, likening his suffering to Job in the Bible, he mentions that in one of the, in the lyrics, and it's just like, yes, completely can identify. So Danny Boy, absolutely one of my favorite songs. I've recently learned while doing research for this that the guy's name who Rufus is singing about is actually Danny or Daniel. I remember thinking, it's too obvious. His name can't be Danny. But I mean, I guess it's true. And there is a picture of Danny in the lyric book in the, well, I have the vinyl, like, so I had Rufus's CD, but I got rid of my CDs a long time ago, but I do have this debut album on vinyl. So I checked it out, and yes, in the album art, in the lyrics for the song Sally Ann, there's a picture of a guy, and that is Danny. That is Danny Boy, the guy, the straight guy that Rufus wrote half of his album about. And he looks kind of like I totally thought he would, like, just like a regular guy, regular straight guy. Track two is April Fools, which was the lead single from this album. It's another song about unrequited love, but this time from anybody. The song was inspired by Rufus being lonely on Valentine's Day with no date, and he feared he'd be alone forever. I guess the story is he signed up to sit in a kissing booth, and nobody went to his booth to pay for his kisses. And I have to say, this is another thing that I really identified with, because when you are young and gay and you just see how quote unquote easy it is for heterosexual couples to couple up, I mean, like from middle school, from high school, like, boyfriends and girlfriends are just everywhere, and holding hands and making out at the movies and going to dances together, going to dates together. Like, it's so quote-unquote easy for that to happen when you're straight, but when you're gay, you kind of feel like, wow, this might actually be it for me. Like, I might be alone forever. And I remember feeling that. I remember being 19, 20, thinking, I'm never going to find someone. I'm never going to have what I want. I'm going to die alone. I remember, this is so funny, I remember crying, like sobbing to myself one night, thinking, I'm going to die alone. I'm never going to find love. And that's kind of what Rufus is singing about in this song, April Fools. Yeah, I would ache over these songs because Rufus was singing what I was feeling, and it really meant a lot to me to have a gay male pop star singing songs that I identified with so personally. The third song on the playlist is In My Arms, which is I don't believe this is about the same Danny character from the earlier Danny Boy song, but this song is about a junkie, a drug addict that Rufus had a tryst with. My guess is this, you know, addict was probably insanely hot, and as anyone can attest, men are pigs for the most part. We are slaves to our desires, and it doesn't matter how messy or sloppy or fucked up a person is, if they are like beautiful and accessible, it's easy to see how someone would fall in love with someone like that. I mean, I guess that's true of anybody, but especially true for guys. Well, I can only speak from my perspective, so to me it seems like guys are more like this. I also recently was in a relationship with someone who was a raging addict, and you know, night after night, week after week, month after month, I put myself through just trauma that I didn't need to, but because of my feelings for this guy and how beautiful he is and how much fun we had when he wasn't a mess, that relationship went on longer than it probably should have. And this is why, again, I understand what Rufus is singing about in this song. Now, granted, the song In My Arms was written, you know, back in the late 90s, and I didn't really resonate with me until more recently. But I still back then felt what Rufus was singing about, because again, you just want, you know, you want to love someone and they are just a mess, and you wish that your love could fix them, you know, in my arm. You wish that you hold him in your arms and you could just make all that bad stuff go away, and that's not the case. So, great song. Oh, I love the song. Track 4 is Beauty Mark, which is Rufus's love song to his mother, Kate McGarrigle. Kate McGarrigle was it's been a while, so I'm not quite sure of the specifics, but generally, she was a folk singer in a group called the McGarrigle Sisters with her sisters in Canada. And they had a radio show, and they were fairly popular. They were a fairly popular touring group. And so that's his mother, Kate McGarrigle. And his father is Loudon Wainwright III, who was also a singer-songwriter, folk singer-songwriter, an American folk singer-songwriter. So they were like these folk powerhouses who came together, got married, had a couple children, Rufus and his sister Martha, and then they broke up and all of that. So Beauty Mark is a song about his mother. It's very descriptive. The lyrics are very descriptive about her simple life, which led her to fame as a popular Canadian singer. He says that he doesn't have her beauty mark, but he does have her taste in music, in fashion, in art. And it's just such a cute song, because you could tell how much he loves his mother from this song. And there has to be something about a female artist with a gay son. Like, of course they had this amazingly close relationship. He sings about how she loves him even though he's not so manly. Like, it's just really, really cute. It's a very sing-songy song. It's not necessarily a song that I would necessarily like because of the style of the way it's sung, but the lyrical content and the reasoning behind it just endears it to me so much. And it's absolutely one of my favorite Rufus Wainwright songs. And I don't know, it kind of makes me, it always made me wish that was kind of the relationship I had with my mother, that we were close like that. We weren't. Also, my mother wasn't like a folk pop star, so, and I wasn't a concert pianist, so. But anyways, there's something to be said about the special relationship between a gay son and his mother. And this song captures Rufus's relationship with his mother perfectly. Track 5 is Imaginary Love. And I think it's a song that all gay people can identify with. You know, one of the lyrics is, any kind of love must be an imaginary love to start with. Which means, you know, love affairs often start in one's mind. And if you're talking about Rufus's feelings for that straight guy, like, it was all in his head, you know? Like, he was in love with this guy, but it was an imaginary love. It was something where he was not able to have the love given back to him, but he managed to have this relationship in his mind, in his imagination, which I can identify with. I really do think that most gay people can identify with this, because it's just not easy to just go out and get a boyfriend or a girlfriend. I mean, it may be easier these days, but it's really not. And, you know, when you're young and you're afraid, that is a huge hindrance to, you know, going out for what you really want, especially in terms of romance. So any kind of love must be an imaginary love to start with. And that's what he sings about in this song. It's just such a great song. I do think that this song is also about Danny. There's a line where he describes a scene where the drunk straight guy is laying in his lap in the back of a cab after a night of drinking. They went out together. And I can just see it. Like, I can just see Rufus sitting in the back of a cab, this drunk guy with his face flushed, passed out in his lap. And he's probably just looking down at him, just like, I love him so much. Like, I totally, totally get that feeling. And yeah, so that's what the song is about. And it's one of my faves, and it definitely had to be on this playlist. So those are all the songs from Rufus's debut album. Track 6 comes from his 2001 album Poses, which was his sophomore album. And track 6 is Cigarettes and Chocolate Milk, which is a song about all the excesses that he loves. The lyric, he sings a lyric, and if I should buy jelly beans, I gotta eat them all in one sitting. Like, I'm the exact same way. Like, when I love something, I just love it full bore, and I just can't get enough, and I gorge myself until I'm sick of it. Like, that's, I get what he's saying. You know, all of the things that he loves are super strong, like cigarettes and chocolate milk, like strong nicotine and strong sugary drink. Like, yes, Rufus, you keep writing these songs that I keep relating to, and this is why I've loved you from the beginning. The line, I'm a little bit Tower of Pisa whenever I see ya, so please be kind if I'm a mess, is one of my favorite lyrics. The line about the Tower of Pisa, I've always taken it two ways. It's either, because he's like, if I'm a bit of a mess, like if I'm a drunken mess and I'm like leaning and I'm not like standing straight, like, still love me. And also, you know, kind of like being shy, like when you're shy and you're not sure if the other guy is gay to start with or into you, secondly, you know, standing sheepishly to the side, being a little shy, like, I don't know, like Rufus just does a really good job of painting scenarios with his lyrics. And I can see these images in my mind as I hear him sing them. And that's why I think his music has always resonated with me from the very beginning. Track 7 is Greek Song. And this is a story song. Like, it tells a story in the course of the lyrics. It tells the story of Rufus who had a liaison with a bisexual guy he hooked up with on vacation. And the lyrics are told from the perspectives of both guys. You know, Rufus on the one hand, and then this Greek bisexual guy who's with his girlfriend, but he's also into Rufus at the same time. Like, but from Rufus's perspective, it was like a hot fling that he had, you know, a very exciting sexual liaison. But for the Greek guy, it was a dangerous liaison. Like, you know, like, you know, in the song, Rufus sings about the fact that he will remember this romantic interaction daydreaming in Barnes and Noble's when he's home. But the Greek guy fears for his life because if his family finds out that, you know, he had sex with a guy, he'd get beaten possibly to death. So it's a very interesting song. The song is sing-songy, and it's a cute song. From Rufus's perspective, it's an exciting, like, postcard memory of this incident. But for the Greek guy, it was obviously a more dangerous situation. And I remember, you know, when Rufus would perform Greek song, the song California and the song Little Sister live in concert on his first tour. So his first tour, he was playing all the songs from his debut album, plus these three new songs that had not been released. Greek Song and California would be released on his second album, Poses, and then Little Sister would be released on his third album, Want. So he would tell stories about these songs when he introduced them, played them. And I remember when he performed Greek Song live, it was like, oh my God, like this is such a great song. I can't wait to hear the studio version. But the song that I really loved the most of his new songs was California. Particularly, I'll talk about California because it's the next song, track 8 on the playlist. But before I play the song, I want to play audio of Rufus Wainwright telling a story about the song California, because I'll let him tell the story. So here is Rufus Wainwright telling his story about the inspiration behind his song California, and how he used to think that Bea Arthur from the Golden Girls was his TV grandmother, and what she thought about that when he told her. So have a listen.
So this is the story. Okay. I've said it many times, but I feel like I have to do it tonight, or this week, and then it'll be done. But she, I've always been a huge Golden Girls fan. And Maude and all of that. And I moved to, I used to watch the Golden Girls with my grandmother as a child, as a gay Todd. And it was, you know, one of the great bonding moments of my life. Until gin. But then she died. My grandmother died, and I moved to LA and was making my first record. I was living on Barham in the Oakwood Apartments for a year. And I know it was a little rough, anyway, so me and the child molesters, but it was weird. Pilot season. Oof. Okay. So I was living there, and I got really, really lonely, and I just watched episode after episode of The Golden Girls, and it really got me through a very difficult time. So I was doing this show once. Yes, I got it through there with The Golden Girls. Later on, after I finished the album, I was invited to do this show, this AIDS benefit, and one of the perks, as well as, you know, doing something about AIDS, was also that Bea Arthur was the MC of the event, so I was very excited to do it, and very, very, very nervous about meeting her, but wanted to, you know, tell her how much I love her. So we're backstage and we're introduced, and I say, Bea Arthur, and I immediately go into it. I'm like, I just need you to know that you know, I watched, you know, The Golden Girls with my grandmother when I was a child, and then she died, and then I moved to LA, and I didn't know anybody in the city, and I ended up watching Lifetime Television a lot, and watching you guys, and you really became my surrogate grandmother. You became my TV grandmother, and you really got me through a very difficult time. I just want to thank you for that, for being my surrogate grandmother, TV grandmother. And she turned to me and she went, I'm not your fucking grandmother. And walked away.
So yeah, that Bea Arthur story was one of my favorite stories that he would tell in concert. And having seen him so many times, especially that first week that I saw him four times in 1 week, I heard that story four times at every single show. But it's hilarious. I mean, I love the Golden Girls. I love Bea Arthur. I mean, like, again, I can't reiterate enough how much Rufus's music resonated with me at this time in my life. Almost every single thing that he put out was something that I either felt or wanted to feel or could identify with or could relate to, or created a fantasy for me. And like revisiting all of that music again in the past week after I made this playlist, I listened to it a few times just to, you know, get myself ready for recording this podcast episode. I was really reminded and taken back to, you know, my early 20s when Rufus kept singing songs that seemed like they were ripped from inside of me. So, okay, track 8, California. Definitely one of my favorite songs that Rufus has ever released. I loved it before it was even released, when he was doing it just live in concert. I loved it before I moved to California. It is his bop song. It is the song that I can dance to. Like, Rufus Wainwright doesn't write bops. He does not write, like, high-energy pop songs. Like, but this is a poppy song, and I think that's another reason why I love it so much. You know, the line, you know, in the story, he talks about the fact that he finally met Bea Arthur, and, you know, he told the story about his grandmother and all that, and being able to tell her, like, you were like my grandmother, and she's like, I'm not your fucking grandmother. Like, it's so funny. It's so funny the way he told it. So when you hear the line in the song, you know, my new grandma, Bea Arthur, like, it's just, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. The lyrics to the song are brutally honest about how fake and cheap Hollywood can be. And in the song, he relays about a scene where he went to a Hollywood party, you know, where, you know, you go to a Hollywood party and you expect, like, caviar and champagne, but it was, like, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And it turns out that that party was at Marilyn Manson's house. Like, it was a Marilyn Manson party, which is so randomly weird. And that was another connection at the time where I was like, see, Rufus, I love you. You're partying at Marilyn Manson's house, so of course I love you. So, yeah, California, one of Rufus Wainwright's best songs, one of my absolute favorite songs by any male singer, and it's a bop, so yeah. Track 9 is Grey Gardens, which is inspired by the famous documentary Grey Gardens that stars Edith and little Edie Bouvier Beale, who were relatives of Jackie Kennedy. Without going into the whole Grey Gardens thing, I mean, gays, you know what I'm talking about. Everyone else, if you've never seen the documentary Grey Gardens, Google it, read about it, or watch it. It's fascinating. These women, spinster women from a major socialite family who became recluses and just lived in squalor. Like, it's fascinating. So this song is inspired by that documentary. It's a favorite of many, many gay men. So it's inspired by Grey Gardens, the documentary, and the novella Death in Venice, which is about an aging man who obsesses and loves a beautiful young man from afar. Like, this song is gay, 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 gay. It's gayer than Rufus singing about same-sex love. And I think that's why, I mean, I love it so much. And I'm not, like, a gay, gay, gay. I mean, like, yes, I'm gay, gay, gay. But, you know, I'm not, like, a Judy Garland fan. I'm not, like, you know, I mean, I guess I can be described as flamboyant or flamey. I don't know. Like, effeminate, whatever that means. Like, that's not necessarily, like, my go-to. I mean, it's fine. Like, do whatever you want. But, like, it's a stereotype that gay men love Judy Garland and Grey Gardens and musicals and opera. And I think Rufus very happily embodies all of those stereotypes, and he's proud of it. And I think that's what he wanted to pay homage to in this song. So, great song, and very Rufus Wainwright, and that's why it made the list. So track 10 is One Man Guy, which is a cover of his father, Loudon Wainwright III's song. And I did not know it was a cover when I first heard it. So when it was released on Poses, I just assumed it was, you know, one of his songs, a fantastic song. It's a song about, you know, someone wanting to rather be alone than be hurt again, which I think we can all identify with. But it's actually one of his father's songs that he covered. So, you know, I'm not a huge Loudon Wainwright fan for a host of reasons. Like, I don't really love folk music, and I've heard some of his songs. I think one of his big songs, or at least one of his most well-known songs, is a song called Rufus is a Tit Man, which he wrote when Rufus was born. And it's a very, in my opinion, kind of like a misogynistic song about, like, yeah, my boy loves tits because he was, like, breastfeeding as a baby, which just, the whole thing just turned me off. And I'm just, and from what I understand, and I don't really know specifics, but I get the sense that Loudon Wainwright III is kind of like this male chauvinist, I guess. His daughter, Martha, who is Rufus's younger sister, wrote a song about him called, what is it? Bloody Motherfucking Asshole, I think is what the song is called. So, take that. I'll let that speak for itself. But Loudon Wainwright did write a pretty decent song in One Man Guy, and Rufus does an amazing job covering it. So that's track 10. Track 11 is Across the Universe, which is a cover of the Beatles song. And as I've mentioned previously, I am not a Beatles fan, but I tend to really like Beatles songs when they're covered by other people. And this is one of the Beatles songs that I really, really enjoy, especially as covered by Rufus Wainwright. There is another cover of Across the Universe by Fiona Apple that I love a lot. So Rufus and Fiona Apple both take this Beatles song that I don't like and make a song that I do like. And that is the last song from Rufus's Poses album. Track 12 is from Rufus's albums Want 1 and Want 2. Want 1 was released in 2003. Want 2 was released in 2004. And it has since been combined into one single double album called just Want. So track 12 is Oh What a World, and the song, so Rufus, you know, when he promoted the release of Want 1 and Want 2, shared a lot of information on his official website about the inspiration for this album, or these albums, and from his website he wrote, "I wrote this on the train from Paris to London at the tail end of the Poses tour, and I was very numb. It's about looking at the world and seeing what's actually there, not feeling either good or bad about it, just feeling apart. I was grasping at some kind of mantra, like, even though the world is a strange place, you're still on the train, you paid for your ticket, and it's gonna arrive at some point. There are lots of trains on this album." So the train motif is something that he sings about a lot on Want 1 and Want 2. And this is one of those songs. It's a catchy song. You know, like, for as much as Rufus embodies so many of the things that I don't necessarily respond to, male voice, you know, male singer-songwriter on a piano, you know, his operatic proclivities, his, you know, all of that doesn't necessarily scream like, yay, Trent's gonna love it. But for whatever reason, he has an ability to write music that really resonates with me and that I really, really enjoy. So Oh What a World is one of those great, upbeat, catchy songs. Track 13, I Don't Know What It Is. Again, he shared on his official website what the song is about. When I first came up with the lines, I don't know what it is, but you gotta do it. I don't know where to go, but you gotta be there. I was at this party for the Strokes in New York. There was this prevailing sense of, we're not quite sure what's happening or what's cool, but we know it's somewhere around here in this room. Like the whole idea of like, just because you're at a cool party, like everybody there must be cool. Like it's this sense of like belonging and like having made it and all of that. So he goes on to say, it wasn't about the party at all. It's about searching, but not knowing what you're searching for. There's the train motif, being on this train heading for either oblivion or salvation and just holding on for dear life. It's clear that on Want One and Want Two, Rufus is really like he was searching for something. He was still single at this time. Later on, I'm happy to say, he would find a partner and he'd get married and he'd have a child. So yeah, eventually he settled down. But like at this point, he was kind of like aimlessly being aimless. And there are a lot of things that he wants when he was writing these albums. And that's what a lot of the lyrical content of these songs are about. And again, you know, like at that time in my life, like I was not settled down. I was just working my first big job. I was, you know, living on my own post-college away from my parents. But like, life was coming at me pretty quickly and I didn't know where it was going. I didn't know where I would end up. I surely wasn't coupled up with someone in any real sense. So, you know, Rufus kind of like sang for many, many years the story of what I was feeling. Track 14 is Vibrate. And essentially this song is about an older guy falling for a younger guy and trying to relate to that younger guy through the age difference. You know, the lyric, like, my phone is on vibrate for you. Like, it's kind of hard to explain. Like, at this time, like, cell phones were very prominent. Like, everybody had a cell phone at this point. You know, they weren't smartphones yet. They weren't iPhones yet. But everybody had a cell phone, so everyone was connected. You know, and if you were in a relationship with someone or someone was very special to you, you had a certain ringtone assigned to them. So when they called, a certain song would ring or your phone would vibrate. I also, to me, it seemed like, you know, there's something to be said, perhaps a little naughty about having your cell phone in your front pocket. And then when it vibrates, you know, kind of close to your business, it kind of like, you know, whoa, what's going on there? And then, oh, it's like the person that you're in love with or thinking about, like, calling you. Like, I kind of think that there's also a little bit of that double entendre there. But about the song, Rufus said this. Picture this. A boy, me, lonely, walking bar to bar searching for a go-go dancer I'd spent a night with my phone in my pocket on vibrate. It's a true story, folks. So that's how Rufus described this song when he would perform it live. And again, I really think he's alluding to that double entendre of, you know, the person that you are interested in making the phone in your pocket vibrate. Wink, wink. There's another line where he says, I tried to dance Britney Spears. I guess I'm getting on in years. I mean, it's a brilliant lyric, and it speaks to his dilemma as an older gay man hanging with younger gays. But, I mean, I never had that problem because, you know, I can dance to Britney Spears. So I can identify with the youths, although the youths these days don't even like Britney Spears. They like Ariana Grande and Billie Eilish, but whatever. Beside the point is I get what Rufus was alluding to, and that's what I love about this song. Track 15 is 14th Street, and it's another story song where the lyrics tell the tale. The lyrics include, you've got my lost brother's soul, my dear mother's eyes, a brown horse's mane, and my uncle's name. You walked me down 14th Street for the doctor to meet after thoughts of the grave, in the home of the brave and of the weak. And then he sings, but why'd you have to break all of my heart? Couldn't you have saved a little bit of it? Why'd you have to break all my heart? Couldn't you have saved a minor part? Just amazing lyrics, and my recitation of the lyrics does not do the song justice. So you have to hear this song to really understand and to really get it. The inference to me is that he's singing about another guy and the reality of having to get tested for HIV when, as you know, gay men do or should. And, you know, whether this guy is someone fleeting or someone who he was in a relationship with, a short one, a long one, it's unclear, but it speaks to the reality of a same-sex relationship, a sexual same-sex relationship, and, you know, just the realities of that. And, you know, dealing with breakup again. Like, Rufus had his heart broken a lot. I think we all have. But as an artist, he can sing about it. And, you know, in his singing about these heartbreaks and relationships, he is speaking to and singing for countless others, me included, which is, you know, the thing I keep trying to hammer home here, in that there aren't very many artists who have been able to put out a body of work that has resonated with me personally in as many ways as Rufus Wainwright has. And yeah, that's why I am talking about him today. Right here, right now. Track 16 is Little Sister. And Little Sister was a song that Rufus had been performing live for years before it was released on Want 1 and Want 2. I remember when Poses came out, his second album, I was very upset to see that Little Sister was not included. Greek Song made the cut and California made the cut, but Little Sister did not, and I was afraid it would never get released because, you know, if it wasn't released on his next album, it might never come to light. And for whatever reason, he decided to sit on it for another, till the next album came out, but he finally recorded it in the studio and released it. And it's one of my favorite songs. It's, he's written at least another song about his sister, Martha Wainwright, probably others, but for sure, he has a song called Martha, which I'll talk about in a little bit, but Little Sister is about his younger sister, Martha Wainwright, and it's basically about how, even though they're both musicians, his life will always be easier because he's a man. And even a gay man has it better than a woman. You know, he was able to get a record deal and go on tour. and she sang backup for him. And, you know, she sings on all of his albums, or at least his first few albums for sure. And she subsequently has had her own career, and she's put out her own music. I mentioned she released a song called Bloody Motherfucking Asshole, which was written about her father, Loudon Wainwright III. But, you know, Martha has not enjoyed the success that Rufus has. And, you know, there's a whole host of reasons why that's the case. But this song speaks to the reality of the fact that men have it easier in all respects than women do. And that's what he's saying in this song. You know, he sings a line that she must use her hips as fodder, but putting her best foot forward. So, you know, women have to, like, be sexy, but they also have to, like, you know, be, you know, compliant and be classy and all of that. History is still a game. History is on my side, he continues to sing. And, yeah, like, an amazing lyricist. Like, he's just a great songwriter. As much as I loved the song when he performed it live in concert, just him on a piano solo, the studio version, as it appears on this album, is played on a harpsichord, and it sounds very Mozart-y, and it's just so much better, you know, the studio version. So while I was upset that it was not released on Poses, I was very, very happy to see that it was finally released on Want 1, Want 2, and was given studio treatment that it absolutely deserves, because it is a fantastic song. And I really hope it's a song that Martha loves, because I love it for her, and I love it that it's about her. Track 17, The Art Teacher. It's a song sung from the perspective of a young student in love with his older male art teacher. I am going to guess and assume that is probably autobiographical. Like, Rufus was probably had a crush on his art teacher when he was in school. Some of the lyrics are, he was not that much older than I was. He had taken our class to the Metropolitan Museum. He asked us what our favorite work of art was, but I could never tell it was him. Oh, I wish I could tell him. Oh, I wish I could have told him. Which is such a cute lyric, and it is such a cute sentiment to sing about. Like, I think many of us can relate to being young and having a crush on an older person, and, you know, wishing that they could tell that person how they felt about them. And it's even more poignant when you consider it's told from the perspective of a young gay boy who probably, you know, felt alone and felt like he would always be alone. And, I mean, I know I felt that way for sure. And the fact that Rufus, having grown up in a artistic home where both parents were artists, I'm sure they were both very accepting of, you know, him coming out as gay when he came out as gay, and probably had gay friends and family members. So even someone who grew up in a nurturing environment like that still had these feelings of fear, speaks volumes about what the gay experience is like. Track 18 is The Gay Messiah. And I remember not liking the song the first time I heard it, but it has become one of my favorite Rufus Wainwright songs over the years. And listening to it with fresh ears all these years later, I am newly obsessed with it, and that's why it had to be put on this playlist. It's a brilliant play on turning Christianity on its ear. It's a song about the Messiah coming back, but he's going to come back as a gay man. You know, there's all of these theories that Jesus was gay and all of that. And sure, I definitely think that Rufus is alluding to that in this song, but it's not what he's actually saying. So whether he's alluding to it or not is up to the perspective of the listener. It's not exactly what he sings about in the song. Some of the lyrics include, about the gay messiah. He will then be reborn from 1970s porn, wearing tube socks with style and such an innocent smile. He will fall from the stars, Studio 54, and appear on the sand of Fire Island's shore. No, it will not be me, Rufus the Baptist I be. No, I won't be the one baptized in cum. What will happen instead, some will demand my head, and then I will kneel down and give it to them looking down. Like, it's very, not very explicit, but it is explicit. It's explicit about the gay messiah coming back and unabashedly being a gay man, you know, alluding to Studio 54 and 70s porn and Fire Island. But, you know, Rufus wants to make it very clear that he's not the gay messiah. He'll just be, you know, like one of the disciples, like John the Baptist. And the whole, like the whole double entendre about, like, you know, someone will demand my head and I will kneel down and give it to them. Like, he's talking about, like, you know, oral sex, but it's also an allusion to John the Baptist when he was beheaded for following Christ in the Bible. So it's just, it's a brilliant song. Lyrically, it's very, very clever. And whatever your feelings are religious-wise, that's beside the point. Like, Rufus is definitely telling a story here, and he's using allusions to Christianity and characters from the Bible. And it's just very, very clever. And it's, again, like I said, I didn't love the song when it first came out, but I have since become a huge fan of it. Better pray for your sins, straights, because the gay messiah is coming, Rufus the Baptist has foretold. All right. That's the last song from Want 1 and Want 2. The next few songs I have chosen for this playlist are taken from Rufus Does Judy at Carnegie Hall, the 2007 live album. Now, as a gay man who is a quote-unquote stereotypical gay man, Rufus Wainwright is a huge fan of Judy Garland, as many gay men are. You know, friend of Judy is a euphemism for a gay man. So I am a friend of Judy, even though I'm not a Judy Garland fan at all, but that's the term. This album consists of live recordings from Rufus's sold-out June 14th and June 15th, 2006 tribute concerts at Carnegie Hall to the American actress and singer Judy Garland. Backed by a 36-piece orchestra, Wainwright recreated Garland's April 23rd, 1961 concert, often considered, quote, the greatest night in show business history. Garland's 1961 double album, Judy at Carnegie Hall, a comeback performance with more than 25 American pop and jazz standards, was highly successful. It spent 96 weeks on the Billboard charts and garnered 5 Grammy Awards, including Album of the Year. So, and all this information is from Wikipedia. So Judy Garland, you know, recorded a live concert back in 1961 of a whole bunch of pop and jazz standards, and it became one of her most successful albums, and it has been revered and beloved by her fans ever since, and 99.9% of Judy Garland fans are gay men. And so all gay men, well, the 99% of those gay men all know this album. And Rufus wanted to pay tribute to Judy Garland by recreating that album. So he, song by song, recreated the whole entire live performance and released it on album. This from Pitchfork Media. Wainwright started listening to the Carnegie Hall album in the weeks and months after September 11th, craving some cheap showbiz cheer, but wound up discovering something deeper. The subsequent war on terrorism and the invasion of Iraq caused Wainwright to become traumatized and disillusioned with anything American, claiming he was reminded of how great, quote, the U.S. used to be. Wainwright said the following of his appreciation for the album during that turbulent time in American history. Now, this quote is from Rufus. Somehow that album, no matter how dark things seemed, made everything brighten. She had this capacity to lighten the world through the innocence of her sound. Her anchor to the material was obviously through her devotion to music. You never feel that she didn't believe every word of every song she ever sang. So, again, as this quote from Pitchfork makes clear, post 9/11, Rufus was like feeling super disillusioned with everything that was going on. Like, you have to remember, this was, you know, the George W. Bush era when he used to be the worst president we ever had. We were at war, you know, all of this anti-American disillusionment just kind of settled in, and he was trying to find escapism. And in this album, he was inspired to want to recreate that escapism for his fans. So that's why he decided to record this album. So track 19 on the playlist is Puttin' on the Ritz, which is an Irving Berlin song performed by Judy Garland and Fred Astaire in the musical Easter Parade. And then again, it was made famous by the singer Taco in 1982. Track 20 is You Made Me Love You, For Me and My Gal, and the Trolley Song, which is a medley of those three songs, which Judy performed that medley in concert in 1961. And track 20 is Over the Rainbow, Judy Garland's biggest hit from The Wizard of Oz, and Rufus performed it with his mother, Kate McGarrigle, playing piano. So those three songs, Puttin' on the Ritz, the medley, and Over the Rainbow, are from Rufus's Judy Garland tribute album. And there's no way that I could talk about Rufus Wainwright and not mention that amazing live album and include these songs on the playlist. Track 22 is from Rufus's 2007 album, Release the Stars. So track 22 is Going to a Town. So Release the Stars was executive produced by Neil Tennant of the Pet Shop Boys. And Going to a Town is a song about the end of a bad relationship, but it's also about Rufus singing about the end of his quote-unquote relationship with America post 9/11 during the George W. Bush years. He did his escapism thing with the Judy Garland album, but ultimately he decided he had to, like, get out of the U.S. So he went to Berlin. So Going to a Town, the town he's going to is Berlin. And Berlin inspired him and reinvigorated him, and he found comfort in the fact that he could find inspiration in a town that, in a city that had its own redemption. So post-World War II, after the reign of Hitler and Nazism and the complete, utter destruction of Germany for all of the horrible things it had done, you know, over the many, many years later, Germany rebuilt itself. It learned from its past mistakes and became a thriving country again. And Berlin became a thriving artistic home for so many people. David Bowie went there to write music, and Rufus Wainwright went there to write music. And that's what this song is about. I think the whole album, Release the Stars, is about that. But for sure, Going to a Town is about that feeling of finding solace and redemption in a city that was able to come back from a dark place, and his hope that America could do the same. Track 23 is from Rufus's 2012 album, Out of the Game. Now, by this point, in 2012, Rufus married Jorn Weisbrod. And the year before, his daughter Viva was born while he was recording this album. And the year before that, his mother, Kate McGarrigle, had passed away due to cancer. So there was a lot going on. He lost his mom, his daughter was born, and he married the love of his life. And all of these things informed the creation of of Rufus's album, Out of the Game. The album was produced by Mark Ronson, and it was marketed as his pop album. And the song Out of the Game, the title song, so he's older and, quote, out of the game, meaning, you know, he's not 20 anymore and he's not, you know, gallivanting with, like, junkies and straight guys who don't want him. He's not, like, partying. He's, you know, older, presumably wiser, and not interested in, and he's, you know, out of the game. But he's also no longer interested in playing the game. You know, like, for him, it's about the music. It's always been about the music. So while he was younger and, quote-unquote, playing the game, he was still releasing the music he wanted to and promoting it. But now that he's, you know, out of the game, it's all about music for him. I know it's confusing, the out of the game thing, but that's what the song is called. That's what the album is called. And that's the feeling he's going for when he sings this song. Track 14 is from his 2020 album, Unfollow the Rules. So Unfollow the Rules was originally supposed to be released on April 24th of this year, but due to the COVID outbreak and the pandemic that we are still suffering through right now, the release was pushed back to this month. So it was just released on July 10th, 2020. And is the whole reason I was reminded by Rufus Wainwright and reminded to go back through his catalog and to listen to all of his music and to podcast about him today. A really cool thing about this record is that Matt Chamberlain plays drums on some of the songs, and Matt Chamberlain was Tori Amos's drummer. They were in the band Why Can't Tori Read together, and then later on when she was a solo artist, he would go on tour and play drums with her. And Unfollow the Rules is meant to bookend his musical story, which started from his debut album. So, as I understand it, his debut album back in 1998 tells the story of Rufus coming into his own as a young artist, and Unfollow the Rules now bookends that story with him being a mature, you know, married man, father. You know, he's written some operas, he's lived a very colorful life, and this is his life now. So that's what the song, the album is being marketed as. So track 24 is Peaceful Afternoon, and it is a love letter to his husband, Jorn. And some of the lyrics include, "Well, it's coming on to 13 years together, babe. I pray that it's the lucky number, because it's all part of the game. Yes, it's all part of the symphony, and I pray that your face is the last I see on a peaceful afternoon." And then later on, "And now that our machine is running at full steam, I pray that nothing shucks a wrench into the matter, but between sex and death and trying to keep the kitchen clean, remember wild roses bloom best in ruins forever after." So this is Rufus singing to his husband, his partner of 13 years, and he's just singing about how the fact that he still loves him and he hopes that his husband still loves him back and that they've been through so much together, and it's just a very, very sweet song. It's the one song on the new album that immediately resonated with me. So now I've listened to Unfollow the Rules a few times, but not enough to really, you know, grasp the entirety of the whole record, but I did want to include one song, at least one song from the album, and this was the clear winner for me. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, if you are a longtime Rufus Wainwright fan and you were unaware that he has a new record out, go listen to it. If you are not a Rufus Wainwright fan, I recommend listen to his new record, yes, but go back to the beginning. Listen to him from the beginning. Listen to these songs that I have selected on this playlist and get a sense of him as an artist. And you might love him as much as I do. Now, there are three more songs on the playlist to round it out. Track 25 is Complaint de la Butte, which is French for Lament on a Hill, which he recorded for the Moulin Rouge soundtrack in 2001. It is a French song from a 1950s movie called French Can-Can, and it's half in French and half in English. So back in 2001, Moulin Rouge was one of the biggest movies, and the soundtrack was one of the biggest soundtracks. You know, Lady Marmalade, huge song, like the biggest single, one of the biggest singles of 2001 and the biggest hit from the album. And Rufus Wainwright was also included on the soundtrack. So Complaint de la Butte, track 25. Track 26, The Maker Makes, was recorded by Rufus Wainwright for the 2005 soundtrack to Brokeback Mountain. A song about forbidden love that is so strong but ultimately unbreakable. And again, Brokeback Mountain was one of the most important films of 2005. It was robbed of the Best Picture Academy Award, and I'm not even going to go into all of that because it makes me angry still that Crash won that year when it should have been Brokeback Mountain. But anyways, so Brokeback Mountain, a love story about gay cowboys is the simple way to describe that movie, but it is a beautiful film directed by Ang Lee. And The Maker Makes was a song that Rufus recorded for the soundtrack. And at the time, was very important for me that one of the most important gay artists that I had known and was deeply a fan of was included on such an important movie soundtrack. So that's why I had to include it here. And track 27 and the final song on the playlist is the song Martha, performed live on BBC Live. It is included on Vibrate, the Best of Rufus Wainwright, his greatest hits record, which was released in 2014. The studio version is featured on All Days Are Nights, Songs for Lulu, the 2010 album that Rufus put out that was like an ode to the Shakespeare love sonnets. And it is another song that Rufus wrote for his sister, but much different in tone than Little Sister, the earlier song that we talked about. This song, very straightforward. It's brother to sister. At this point, Rufus and Martha were probably not as close as they had been, particularly as siblings, as friends, and musicians. They had both at this point been, they'd both been separately married and living their own lives. And I got the sense that there was some kind of falling out, or if not a falling out, like that life got in the way and kind of separated them. Cause they used to be very close. Like she sang backup on all his records and they toured together and they were very, very close. And I got the sense they were close their whole entire lives. But then as adults, they kind of got separated for whatever reason. I'm not exactly sure, but maybe it was just as simple as this life got in the way. And they were brought back together again by their sick mother. So the song was written and recorded before Kate McGarrigle passed away. And the realization that time is fleeting and the death of their mother, or the coming death of their mother, probably scared Rufus and made him want to reach out to his sister and say, you know, we need to mend fences, we need to to, you know, get our closeness back. He sings, "Martha, it's your brother calling. Please call me back. Have you had a chance to see Father, wondering how he's doing? There's not much time for us to really be that angry at each other. It's your brother calling, Martha. It's your brother calling. Please call me back." It's a very sweet song. It's another love letter to his sister Martha, and I hope it served its purpose and brought them back together, because surely the death of their mother was hugely impactful for the both of them, and I'm sure it was very hard for the both of them. And, you know, nothing can really prepare you for that. Even when you see it coming, the loss of a parent is very, very painful. And the fact that that they were, quote-unquote, estranged, or I'm assuming they were estranged at the time, he decided to reach out to her in a way that he was very good at, and that was by writing a song about it. So, yeah, those are the Rufus Wainwright songs that I want to share with you. Those are my stories of my long relationship with Rufus Wainwright, going on, 20 years almost? Yeah, 22 years I've been a fan of Rufus Wainwright. So I'm very heartened to see that he is still releasing music, that he has a new record out that is days old. So go listen to it. Go buy it. And if you are not familiar with Rufus Wainwright, go and get familiar. He is a fantastic singer-songwriter. And if you are a fan and you have taken some time from listening to him like I did, I think it would behoove you to go back and be reminded of how fantastic an artist, singer-songwriter he is. So hopefully this playlist will help in that endeavor, and I hope you enjoy these songs as much as I do. And if you do, go back and listen to the records in full, because I promise you will get much, much more than the few things I talk about in this podcast episode. And with that, I will leave you for another week, and I will be coming back at you next time. Bye. Each episode of Spooky Electric has a playlist that I have created for each individual episode. The playlist can be found on my Spotify account, Trent Venegas, in the playlist folder titled Spooky Electric. The playlist track listings are listed on the Spooky Electric Instagram at Spooky Electric, where the O's are zeros. S-P-0-0-K-Y-E-L-E-C-T-R-I-C.